UK Wine Show, show number 79, Roses Port with Anthony Sir Ivor. On this week's show, port.
Drink the sun and to eat the dust.
And in the news this week, Europe's cool climate countries vote against sugar ban, Australia could get new GI zone, and Air New Zealand Wine Awards put Trinity Hill on top.
G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 79 for the 30th of November 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Antonio Sir Ivor. He is winemaker and general manager of Porthouse Roses. We're going to be asking him what's going on in the Giro and Oporto. Antonio is not only the general manager of Roses, he is a member of the Wine Companies Association and a member of the Interprofessional Council of the Giro and Port Wine Institute. We find out what the different vineyard gradings mean and how come we're hearing more about Giro wines. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. At a meeting of the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee, German and Austrian MEPs voted against EU wine reform's proposal to ban the addition of sugar to wine. The prohibition would stop winemakers increasing the alcohol content of their wines through adding sugar. Instead, winemakers would only be allowed to enrich or chaptalise their wines by using grape juice concentrate, which is a much more expensive option. However, the vote has no formal influence on the final decision, which will be made by the Council of Ministers when they meet on the 18th of December 2007. Meanwhile, discussion is underway about the creation of a broader Australian geographical indication, which would be known as Greater Australia. The new GI would include Western Australia in the Southeastern Australia GI, which currently covers New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. The idea has stemmed from the prospect of a much reduced 2008 harvest, which could lead to southeastern Australia using grapes from Western Australia to fulfil supply. Winemakers have mixed feelings about this new so-called super zone, fearing a dumbing down of the Australian wine category when they should be conveying the diversity and regionality of their wines. And finally, Trinity Hill has scooped Air New Zealand's top wine award with their Hommage Syrah 2006 from Hawke's Bay. The competition is the country's most prestigious award for New Zealand wine, and over 1,500 wines were entered this year. For the first time also, a trophy for the best sustainable wine was up for grabs and was awarded to a Chardonnay produced by Cottage Block, again in the Hawke's Bay region. Chair of Judges and Master of Wine Steve Smith described the Trinity Hill Syrah as an iron fist in a velvet glove, and the Chardonnay as rich with savoury characteristics and a nutty complex. If you're into New Zealand wines, go to their website at airnzwineawards.co.nz for a full list of the award winners. Well, that's all this week, but 70 years ago, a statue of Dom Pierre Perignon was built in Reims. 100,000 people were expected to attend the dedication of the statue in honour of the man who discovered the champagne process. Don't forget you can get more detail on these stories on the news homepage of our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. I'd like to support that. Sandra Clement, who researches and writes the full news articles, does a great job. And if you want to know more about any news story that's on the podcast, do go to our website to get much more details on the article. And we've just updated our news homepage so you can get the news a lot easier. It has a list of our current podcasts and news items, as well as spotlights on news, region, producers, and much, much, much more. You can get to there by going to 3050.co.uk and clicking on News Homepage. Do think about using that as your homepage if you go online to listen to the podcast. On the news this week, though, chaptalisation of wine, I'm really trying to understand what the arguments are for replacing sugar with grape must or grape juice. On the one hand, sugar is neutral, and it does a great job at raising the alcohol level of wine, but it can be used to increase cropping levels. That is, if you knew you could not chaptalize or add sugar to the wine to increase the alcohol level, you may actually grow less grapes to ensure a full ripeness of it, effectively meaning that chaptalization allows higher yields, which is fairly understandable if you're in an environment where you're trying to reduce the amount of production. But by allowing grape juice to be used instead, it doesn't get around that. If you know you can add grape juice to the wine, you're still going to increase your yields. And it also will taint the wine. It'll introduce flavours that you may not necessarily want. The only advantage that I can see is that you may be able to increase the demand of unwanted hot climate grapes and grape juice, currently being paid for by the EU as part of their emergency distillation. It is obvious that the UK and German wine growers don't want this, let alone the members of the European Parliament, which, let's face it, Gordon Brown is not going to care too much about. But you have to start thinking, is this a real requirement or is it a negotiating ploy by the EU? I know one thing, regulation stopping the expansion of wine producing regions in Europe is taking the focus off UK wine producers. And the quicker the EU can get out of trying to control the market, the better. Let the people who won't or can't sell their wines go bankrupt and those who can sell their wines make money. I'm really pleased with Trinity Hill Syrah scooping the top Air New Zealand award. There are some stunning Syrahs coming out of New Zealand, and Hawke's Bay in particular, and I've been singing their praises for a couple of years now, and I think if you've been enjoying New Zealand Pinot, you may just like the Syrah as well. These wines are full-bodied, but with clean varietal aromas and a backbone of fine tannins and acidity. They're nicely structured wines, and I reckon you'll start to see more of them over the next year or two. At the moment, you can only really get New Zealand Syrah from a New Zealand specialist importer. But I reckon by the end of 2008, you'll see them in some good independents and maybe even a few supermarkets. And by 2009, I think you'll think about them the same way as you think about New Zealand Pinot. Next article, our monthly poll's all finished up. As part of our monthly poll, I try and drill into the issues behind the news. So this week, we're talking about wine units. If you recall, the question was, the UK government advises drink no more than 3 to 4 units of alcohol a day. Of the 127 results we had, 2% don't know what counts as a unit, 26% they drink about that amount, 27% drink less, 31% drink more, and 13% don't know, don't worry about it. What disturbs me about the poll was not the results. In fact, 53% claiming to be drinking at sensible levels or below. I think that's pretty good. It's a lot higher than I expected. What disturbs me at the poll is that I base the poll on a meaningless measure of sensible drinking. By using this as a measure, it adds weight to it as an accurate measure, when in actual fact, it's an almost random number that was very little health research. But this poll has made me think a lot about my own consumption, which I would say I tend to be mainly in the hazardous zone. Above sensible drinking, but below harmful. I was going to say that I rarely binge drink, but according to Alcohol Concern, there is no measure of what a binge drinking experience is, although I think we probably have a fair idea of it ourselves. So whenever you hear the term binge drinking, remember there's no official measure, so any statistics quoted are completely meaningless. The Department of Health quoted heavy drinking as 8 to 6 units for men and women, and this is about that hazardous level that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And this is sometimes used as a measure for binge drinking. So for men, if you're having just under 3 pints on a Friday night, then you're a binge drinker. For women, it's about 2 pints of beer, or around 60% of a bottle of wine. Looking at these numbers, I do occasionally binge, which I was surprised at because I don't really think of it that way. I'm not up the high street tipping out rubbish and getting into fights. Having a couple of beers or a couple of glasses of wine at home after the kids have gone to bed. Personally, I think this is absolute tosh. So while the rest of the wine trade is getting behind the sensible drinking message, I'm not convinced that it is a sensible measure at all. This look at alcohol consumption has left me with the feeling that there's a lot of noise being created on some pretty shaky opinions. I do intend to get to the bottom of this next year, so there'll be a couple of podcasts looking at alcohol and wine. We'll hopefully talk to the people who set these levels. But the shows aren't recorded, so who knows what's going to happen. Next up, we have the interview with Antonio Saraiva on port. Hi, I'm here with Antonio Soaiva. He's the winemaker at Roses. They're a port company in Portugal. How are you, mate?
So, I'm a Portuguese from the Douro region. So I was born in that fantastic region that is producing port wine. Mm-hmm. So it's the first demarcated region all over the world. So we are talking about 1756 that the region has been demarcated.
Yeah.
And it's a region that we are making port from so long time, mm-hmm. and very linked to the British market, because it has always been one of the most important markets for port wine. But I think you are a very matured market, so it's very important for us now, because we are ready to be in that very matured market.
You guys have been making port. I'm a big fan of your 10-year-old Tawny. I quaff a fair bit of that in summer and winter. But what I want to get to today is talk a wee bit about the Douro itself, and a wee bit about the terroir in the Douro. Quite a few years ago, when I was doing my diploma and my WSET stuff, we had to learn all about the different grades of soils and vineyards in the Douro. But to be honest, haven't quite remembered it all as much as I should have.
I can imagine that.
Can you recap on the different types of vineyards?
Yeah.
And what sort of determines the different grades of vineyards?
Yeah. You know, Douro, difficult to describe, because it's a very large region. We are talking about 250,000 hectares, and we are planted about 40,000 hectares of vineyards. Mm-hmm. So, and the vines are planting all over the Douro River. Mm-hmm. So the soil is schist. We are living with very high temperatures in summer, which can be 40, 45 degrees. So this is making the typicity of port, what you're calling the terroir.
Yeah, okay, very hot climate. Is it cold in winter, continental, or is it still...
No, it's a microclimate. In the Douro, we have a Mediterranean microclimate, because it's protected by mountains. Mm-hmm. We are protecting from the air of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
So that's why you have lots of concentration of heat. So sun is very present. Not so much wind. So that's why we have all that maturity. Okay, so what is the terroir of the Douro? So I told you it's a very dry region, very hot. Mm-hmm. And the productivity in our vineyards, it's very low. We are talking about per hectare in the Douro, we are talking about medium 6 tons per hectare.
What's that in hectolitres? That's what, six?
Well, I'm used to talk about liters. So 45 hectares, about 45 hectares.
45 hectolitres per hectare.
So per hectare.
Top Bordeaux, 35. Big regions, 150,000.
Yeah.
150 hectolitres per hectare. So
yeah, so it's,
down the
it's
bottom
the climb.
Yeah.
And in our region, we have our vineyards are classified by letters.
Yeah.
Okay? The first top quality is letter A. And the last one, in terms of qualification, is letter F.
That sounds like some grades I used to have.
And we have 12 criteriums, 12 criteriums to that we are giving points.
Yeah.
And to achieve at A letter or B or C or D. So one of the most important thing is altitude.
Okay.
Because we want that very concentration of sugar, so we want very hot.
Yeah.
So if the vineyards are very low, so near the river, mm-hmm. there are much concentration of sand and alcohol and sugar. Because even we can think it's okay, but if it's really near the river, there will be lots of humidity.
Humidity?
Humidity of the...
humidity, yeah.
But no, because we are in schist. Because schist is like blades, you know, and so it's protecting the humidity from the river to go in the land.
Oh, okay, because it doesn't flow through it.
Yeah, because in the Douro you can't find water up in the hills, not near the river.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because that schist is like walls all over
the
river.
Oh, it's up the hill, but it can't go through it.
Yeah. So that's explained, because people say, okay, but stupid, because near the river, all the humidity of the river will be there. But no. Okay? So altitude, We have a sun exposition, of course.
So the reason, just getting to altitude, it's normally cooler the higher you go.
Yeah, because if you are in the top of the mountain, because anyway, for port, it will be about 450 meters, mm-hmm. okay? After that, you can no more make port, so you'll be in letter F or letter G, so it's no more for port. Because you have more production, because there is humidity,
okay? Yeah.
And you have not that sand concentration, so your grapes are with much more water.
Yeah.
Because the sand, the heat is concentrating the sugars.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
It's a bit like why they don't irrigate, not allowed to irrigate in Europe, because more you irrigate, you get more of less flavoursome grapes.
Yeah. But in the Douro, we are irrigating when we are planting, because that region is so dry.
Yeah.
And we are planting not a draft plant. We are planting the original plant, what you call the American. And we are only making the draft next year. Because it's so dry and so hot. And so, of course, one of the important things to have that classification is the grape variety.
Mm.
Grape variety is very important.
Oh, okay. What do you need for an A grade?
Well, we have what we call the top grape varieties. In red, we have Touriga Nacional.
Yeah.
We have Touriga Franca, we have Tinta Roriz, we have Tinta Barroca, we have Tinto Cão, we have Sozão. So these are the main, the most important and the best grape varieties.
Yeah.
So if you can put other varieties, that will give him more production. But when the Port Wine Institute is going to control your vineyards to give you, okay, the classification for port, mm-hmm. because since the moment that you are planting, at the moment that you are producing port, you need 5 years.
Yeah.
So before beginning to production, the Port Wine Institute will go and verify, okay, if you have planted at the right land, if you had put where the sun exposition, the altitude, what grape variety, and all this, they are giving X points.
Yeah.
And with those points will be letter A, B, C, D, okay?
So it's altitude, grape variety,
the sun exposition,
the sun position,
the soil. Because when the soil is only schist, only rock, is the best.
Yep.
Because during the day, the schist is keeping, it's absorbing the heat, and during night,
releases.
So the temperature on the grape will almost be the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it will not the plant not suffer from those variety of difference of temperature.
Some people say that a high change in temperature, high during the day, low at night,
mm-hmm.
can actually enhance flavors in the grape variety. Do you agree with that, or is more the sugar level the most important thing?
No, for us it's the sugar level.
Okay.
Because I'm not only talking about the sugar level, of course, but all the things, all the experience that have been made in the Douro, it's, even the ancient people, I remember my grandfather was telling me, for to produce very, very good grapes, the grape to be good, she needs to drink the sun
mm-hmm.
and to eat the dust. So very hot and so dry that there is always dust in the air. So this is the top quality, okay?
What about if you get a really, really hot, dry summer? Do you find that the vines die off at all, or...?
Well, what I was telling you, when we are planting the new plants, we are irrigating, of course.
Yeah.
And but never in the plant, always a little bit
To the side.
Side, because we want that all the force of the plant goes in the soil, and in schist the roots are going very, very deep.
Yeah.
So in the Douro, plants are used to that. So we need, I don't know, because we had already 3 or 4 years with a really very dry and very, very hot. All Portugal was burning, and there was no dead plants in the valley.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with the Australians at the moment and their plants.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you grow things on the desert.
No. No, and we have, of course, we have the Douro River. We are not using for irrigation, of course, but...
What's the name of the Portuguese regulatory body? The
EVDP, Port Wine Port and Dore Wine Institute.
They set sort of quotas on how much you're allowed to produce, don't they?
Yeah.
How does that work? Is it based a bit on the grading? But it's a weird system, isn't it? It's like, we think the market's going to want this much, so we're going to control this, but you've got 10 years of stock. I've never really understood that.
No, because, there is a scientific method. Because now the Port Wine Institute has two branches. So they have the branch for, it's the Portuguese government to certificate the quality of the wines. Mm-hmm. And there another one is the interprofessional. Okay, so I am in the interprofessional. I have one of the guys in that council of the interprofessional.
Oh, okay.
For the commerce. And what we are deciding each year about July, and we are seeing how much stock there is in our companies, how much stock there is in the door, in the producers, what has been the sales of last year, and to avoid that we are producing too much more wine or less wine. So we're seeing, okay, what we hope it will be the very good year or regular year. So we are deciding how much we'll produce a port.
But how do you control that? Because obviously if you're not irrigating, you've got no control of yields from irrigation. You can't ramp it up. How do you decrease the production?
All the area, Port Wine Institute, exactly know how many vineyards are planted by letters.
Yeah.
And when we are deciding how much we are making of port, of course, they are distributing that in terms of quality. So letter A will have 100%, letter B 90%, and so on. Okay.
And they'd have to do something like a green harvest or something like that?
No, because in our region we are producing two wines. We are producing port and Douro. And we know that the global production of the Douro demarcated region, it's about the double what we are producing, or more than the double that we are producing in terms of port.
So you just produce less port if you need to trim production back and produce more of the Douro still wines?
Of course.
I'm with you. Okay.
And the quantity, because as you know, Douro is port is a fortified wine. Okay, so the quantity that you are using with brandy to make port is controlled by the Port Wine Institute.
Yeah.
So we are given only a certain percentage of brandy to make port. So you cannot make port if your grape has not a potential about, I don't know, minimum of 13 degrees. Not possible.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, now that makes sense. But talking about those still wines, though, I seem to be hearing more and more and more about the still wines. What's going on there? Are you guys? It sounds like you're producing more still wines. Is that true, or what's going on?
No, we always have produced still wine because I was telling you the region is producing more than the double what we are selling in port. And I am from the region, so I was born in Pinhão in the Douro Valley. But I remember my father and my grandfathers. They say, okay, we are producing port, the best grapes, the best selection for making port. At the end of the harvest, say, okay, this is only table wine for the people that are drinking when they are working the vineyards, and it's only wine to make alcohol again, to put again in port, and no one really cares about that. That was the reality.
Yeah.
That all the people was putting all the know-how in port, and the other, it was just table wine for okay. So, but honestly, if you are producing a so fantastic wine as port, there is no reason that with the same grape variety, with the same climate, we could not produce a fantastic wine as the Douro is. And so that's why we are beginning to work on that. And in all the international tastings, all the people say, wow, this is a fantastic wine. So we are now promoting the Douro Valley, and the Douro Valley is producing port and Douro.
So if port ever dried up, so to speak, or the demand decreased for port, you would just produce more and more red wine effectively, wouldn't you?
For example. No, but, it depends if there is a market for that, because as I told you, in the region we are using to make port brandy, so we need wine to make that brandy, and more people are talking about Douro wine, so because if not, that doesn't make sense anyway. In the Douro, you cannot produce lots of quantity of grapes because if you know the region, it's like a mountain. So it's the cost per hectare in our valley, it's very high. When you are talking about mechanization in the Douro and say, okay, in Roger's company, all our vineyards are 100% mechanized. Mm-hmm. But 100% of what is possible, and it's very low what is possible.
Because it's too hilly.
Yeah, it's only rocks. When we are planting, people are still there, plant by plant, by hand.
Yeah, I've seen photos of people having to blow holes in the ground just to get the ground. Yeah.
And they are transporting all land, okay, because there's only rocks. So we're putting the plant and having a little bit of land, they are putting hand by hand and putting all that. So, and we are 100% mechanized, so...
You talked about planting. I presume you're not planting at the moment.
Yeah, well, we are planting.
Are you? What about the EU planting ban?
We are planting since we begin in Portugal. All each year we are planting, but the global area in the Douro, like in other regions in Europe, well, is not decreasing. So the global area it's exactly the same. So for me to plant 1 hectare, someone has to take 1 hectare out. Okay, so we are buying land. Where I know that should be letter A, and anyway, I cannot plant if the Port Wine Institute doesn't give me the authorization to plant.
Sure.
And they are only giving the authorization if it's to increase quality, which means if someone is taking out the letter D or E, and to plant in the letter A or B. Okay? So if not, they are not authorizing you. So anyway, the region in terms of quality is growing.
Yeah.
And... it's growing in terms of quality, so more letter A and B. But we know that when we are planting in letter A and B, the quantity of in production it will be lower.
Because you're producing less.
Of course. So we are already growing in terms of quality and decreasing in terms of productivity anyway. So
Makes sense. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, Antonio. Thank you very much for your time.
It was my pleasure.
Cheers very much.
Port is a great, full, rich, heavy drink, perfect for those winter months. When you consider that the very low yields, vinification process, and aging requirements, I'm amazed at how cheap it can be. If you want to know more about different types of port and serving temperatures, you can go back to show 29 where we spoke to Rod Smith, MW for Metzendorf, the importers of Taylor's Port. And next week, we're going to be talking with Tim Apkin, MW and Wine Communicator of the Year 2007. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.